So we'll get started again. As I said, we're going to now start looking at some of the technical details of the protocol. And in the first picture, we're going to take a look here at the fact that if we look at the overheads, here's our IP overhead, UDP header, and the real-time protocol header, versus the amount of data that we actually carry, it's the audio content, you can see we've already got a problem. Because with 10 to 20 milliseconds of audio per frame, we have only about 33 octets of content. Unfortunately, we've got about 40 to 60 octets of overhead, right? So we have sort of a problem here, because basically what we see is that we're only getting about 50% efficiency in the utilization, and that's only considering the network and higher layer overheads. If you also include the lower layer overheads in the link or physical layer, it turns out that this performs incredibly badly. And so there's a very nice thesis from about a year ago of a student looking at the new LTE, which is the successor beyond the current 3G standards, for carrying voice over IP traffic in that network, because basically you're spending an enormous amount on overhead. But the problem is that we only want to carry a small amount of information here, because if we wait too long, what happens? Right? What would happen if we doubled our amount of data so that we would carry 40 milliseconds worth of audio here? Okay, think of what's happening. At the end with the microphone, we have to wait 40 milliseconds collecting the data before we can process it and send it off. Right? It flows through the network, which takes some period of time, arrives at the other end, and because we probably want to buffer at least one packet, it's going to wait till the other packet is played out, and suddenly we see that these packetization times are additive with our delay, right? And if we have a delay budget of basically 180 milliseconds, we don't want to put too much packetization delay. Otherwise, when the speech arrives at the other end, it's going to have had too much of a delay. We'll see the details of this shortly. So we want to keep these fairly short. But what is short? Well, there's this very nice paper, and you can take a look at the slides. And if we look at speech, 10 microseconds is the smallest differentiable time that our auditory system can detect as a time difference. Very short. And we use that to do localization. 3 milliseconds is the shortest phoneme. And that's a plosive, right? So this explosion of energy out of your mouth. That's 3 milliseconds. This thing is only 10 to 20 milliseconds long. A glottal pulse, which means this stuff here starts vibrating, that's 10 milliseconds there. And if we look at the average phoneme, not the shortest, but the average, it's 100 milliseconds, which means in the course of that phoneme, we'll get 5 of these packets sent. And if we look at an exhale period during speech, it's about 4 seconds. Now, there was one individual, Tornia Grace, a former professor at the Karolinska, who's one of the few people I know who could speak while both inhaling and exhaling, which was certainly a problem for students trying to keep up. But the net result is if we look at these timings, we see that most of the time, if we lose a single packet, it isn't going to make any difference. And so this is one of the great secrets of why does voice over IP actually work in practice? Right? Because it's only if we lose several of these in a row that we're likely to really lose the sense of what the speech is. But hey, if we're allowed to lose a few packets, we don't need extremely high reliability for the packet delivery network underneath us. Yes, it works. So how do these protocols fit together? Well, RTP is used to provide the data to video codecs, audio codecs, and those are used in the audio and video applications. And it sits on top of UDP and sits, of course, on top of IP. Now, mirroring RTP is the RTP control protocol, which is part of a set of signaling protocols. And this is the set of protocols used in H.323. And here's the set that are used with SIP. So we still have the same RTCP, but now we have SIP and SDP to deal with signaling for a call, and they can sit on either UDP or TCP or several other transport protocols. And in the case of streaming applications, we have RTSP playing a similar role for control as RTCP does in the case of RTP. So what's this real-time delivery? Well, it really means that we need to have the same temporal relationship coming in as going out. So that generally means that the delay between the two should be roughly fixed. Okay? There's going to be some delay, but it should be roughly constant. So there are two things that we need. We need ordering and time. And for ordering, what we do is we use sequence numbers. So if the one packet were to take one path and the other packet were to take a different path, we need to, when they arrive, be able to put them in the correct order. Otherwise, this sound will sound strange. Right, if we play them in the wrong order. We also need timestamps for timing. And the reason here is the fact that if we do silent suppression, when we get to the other end, we receive a set of packets, we need to know, is this the next packet that I expect, or did I lose some? And therefore I should hold this a while, waiting to see if one of these other packets arrive. But the result of having a separate sequence number and a separate timestamp means I can play them out as I expect, and I can deal with the difference between missing packets and silence. Okay, so if we look at the source, it's sending packets every once in a while, and they arrive at the destination at different times. Now, if we're lucky, the packet arrives before it's time to play out that packet. And as long as it arrives before then, there's no problem. We're not missing anything. But in this case, the packet arrived too late. It should have arrived here. We needed to start playing packet 3 here, but it didn't arrive. So what do we do? As we said earlier, we need to play something. So some approaches are, well, what we do is we just take packet 2 and we see that packet 3 hasn't arrived yet. We just sort of stretch it out a little bit to fill in that period of time. And when packet 3 arrives here, we have this time to play, we sort of squeeze it in a little bit. And from a signal processing point of view, we can do that by resampling the speech, and therefore we can play it out faster or shorter. And if we're careful, the user doesn't notice. Alternatively, is we could increase the playout delay. So instead of having this as the playout delay, if we make this the playout delay, then this packet that arrived too late with the packet playout delay A would be fine. But the problem is now we've increased our delay. Now if our overall delay is relatively short, this is not a problem, because we, as we'll see, we can increase it up to a certain point of view, and then interactive speech breaks down. But if the people are, or the person or entity we're communicating with is physically far away, then just the time of propagation is going to set a bound for us, and we can't add too much more delay beyond that. But we can take advantage of this. In addition, it turns out we're not only interested in delay, we're interested in delay variance. Right? It's delay we adapt to, but the delay variance is the second order difference. It's the variance in the delay. And that causes us problems, because if it's longer than the delay we planned for, then we're going to end up losing that packet. So if we look at the end-to-end delay from the so-called mouth-to-ear delay, we have the time to encode, to packetize, and then we have to transmit, propagate, switch, route, receive, and we do that multiple times. We get to the far end, we put it into a so-called playout buffer, a dejitter buffer, decode it, and play it. And the sum of all of that is bounded. And one of my very favorite papers is this paper by Cole and Rosenblum called Voice over IP Performance Monitoring. And they basically fit this equation to the perception by the user of the effect of the delay. And if you look at this equation, you can see basically it's really two pieces. So if we look at the plot, they don't have a plot of that. But basically what you'll see is it goes along slowly and then drops very fast. I think I've got a plot of this coming up. Anyhow, but for delays less than 177 milliseconds, the conversation is very natural, whereas above that, it gets strained, and eventually it just becomes simplex, only one person at a time and so forth. Okay. So the playout delay should track the network delay as it varies. So if the load increases somewhere in the network, the packets spend longer in the queues at the routers, and therefore the delay goes up. Therefore, what do we want to do? We want to increase our playout delay. Except the problem is that pushes us into this bound at 177 milliseconds. So we need to carefully track it to try to keep our delay bounded. Another problem is the delay is computed for every talk spurt. It's based on the observed average delay and the deviation from this average delay. So one of the neat things that we can do here is that we can say, well, during these intervals between talk spurts, it's a chance to get caught up. Right? So instead of sending data synchronously and playing it out synchronously, we're receiving it asynchronously, and sometimes the packets arrive on time, and sometimes they arrive a little late. So therefore, we purposely delay them a little bit so that on average, the packets arrive before it's time to play them. Okay? But if you're not careful here, if the sender is transmitting packets just a little bit faster than you're playing them out, what will happen? Well, your buffer will grow and grow and grow. Okay? So, is this a problem or not? No, it won't lead to denial of service. It'll just mean that the system will start to get more and more behind until suddenly you say, boy, it's strange that we started out, the conversation was good, the quality sounds good, but that, boy, the delay has gotten very high. Part of the reason for this is it turns out that if you use two PCs, and let's say that you sample over here at 8,000 times per second and digitize the audio, packetize it, and send it, and over here at this computer, you play it out using a digital to analog converter that's also running at 8,000 samples per second, why is there a problem? How can we end up with extra packets here or less packets than we need? Well, the problem is this 8,000 sample per second clock over here was 8,000 plus or minus 10%. And the 8,000 sample per second clock over here playing the audio out was also 8,000 plus or minus 10%. Yes. If this one's slow by a little bit and this one's fast by a little bit, we can be producing more data than this one is playing out. And it won't be much, but you'll notice it. Now, is that a realistic number? Does anyone know? Anyone ever look at their clock on your PC? If you don't synchronize to the network time protocol, what happens after a few days? Right, you look at the clock on your computer and you look at your watch or you listen to the fire siren go off or you look at network time somewhere else and you notice the times don't match, right? Because of clock drift. That's because the clocks aren't exactly clocking at the speed that they say that they are rated for. And those small differences can bite us. And amazingly enough, in Li Wei's original work, she never noticed this, but Thomas Matheson did, because the 8 kilohertz sampling would be just slightly different, and he would see in some computers, when they were communicating with each other, the buffer would grow and grow and grow, and with other computers, it was playing out faster than it was receiving it, and so there were these periods of time it had nothing to play. And it just depended on who you were talking to. So, globally, we can think of there being an NTP, or Network Time Protocol clock, that's marching along very, very exactly, hopefully, usually synchronized to atomic clock somewhere. Then we have an RTP clock that's deciding, here's the time when we send RTP messages, the real-time control protocol messages, and that gives us information about when these packets are being received, and then we use that to set the time when we're going to play those packets. Right? So we have an overall playout time, it's the sample generation time, when the sample is generated, the local clock synchronization, the sender packetization delay, the network delay, getting it from the sender to the recipient, and then we put it in a buffer and buffer it to dejitter, and then we play out, and it's the sum of all of those things is the delay we hear between when someone spoke it and it's actually played out. Right, so it isn't just the network delay, it's this whole set of delays. And people often forget about this local clock synchronization. Now, what happens if we lose a packet? Well, the problem is we don't have enough time to send a request back saying, oh, I dropped packet number 5,625, please retransmit it. How long would that take? The round trip time, right? Plus processing to do it. Well, as we saw from some of those round trip times, they were already close to the bound for our total time. So we can't do that. In some cases, they exceeded our bound in time. So we have to live with it. Hey, it's too bad. Or we can use a technique like forward error correction, where we send extra data. So for example, with forward error correction level 1, when I send a packet over here, in the next packet, not only do I send the new data, but I send another copy of the data I sent in the previous packet. Now, what's my cost of doing that? Yeah. So we go back to this previous picture, and we see to do that, I just simply send a packet that has twice as much payload. Who cares? Right? Because we had so much overhead anyhow. So yes, we're using twice the bandwidth, but we're only sending the same number of packets. And therefore, the amount of overhead is actually less per byte that we're sending. But the net result is, what happens at the recipient now? Well, if I lose one packet, does it matter? No, because in the next packet, I get both the data that should have been in the packet that I'm missing and the new data. Okay, so that means if I was lucky enough to lose only every other packet, which would be 50% packet loss statistically, I wouldn't lose anything. Pretty powerful. Right? It's only now if I lose 2 packets in a row that I actually lose the data. Okay, so for a small increase in bandwidth, we could tolerate a rather high loss of packets, provided they were independent and not a pair of packets. Now it's possible to do this coding over more packets, etc., and so you can make it more robust. But if you don't have a packet to pay, and you don't have the replacement data for it, what can you do? Well, you can play comfort noise, like white noise, or you could play noise like in the last sample, and it turns out that there's some very clever things that you can do to actually estimate the background noise. Or if you're using very highly encoded audio, a bit rate of 10 to the minus 5 will produce very noticeable errors. So this suggests that we don't want to use very highly coded audio. Right? Because the problem is in very highly coded audio, there's less bits being sent per second of speech. So losing any of those bits has a big effect. This is really very strange. Right? Because if you talk to your classmates in signal systems and sensors who study signal processing, right? What do they study? They study techniques to code this down to the minimum number of bits. So when I was a graduate student at the University of Utah, there were people studying signal processing then that were trying to encode speech in 1,200 bits per second and still have it be intelligible. But the problem is, if you lose any of those bits, what you receive on the other end is completely unintelligible, because there's so much information contained in each of those bits. But the odd thing is, if I'm completely dumb and I use G711 coding, which is simple pulse cut modulation coding, what happens now if I lose an entire packet? There's almost no effect, because there's such low coding that I have lots of redundancy. Right, so do I try to be clever and reduce my bit rate very low, or do I say, nah, it's better to be stupid but lucky, right, and simply send more bits, but now if there are errors, so what? I'll be lucky. And I get perfectly acceptable speech at the end. This isn't what the people in speech coding wanted to hear. So nowadays, do people try to do low bitrate speech coding? Does anyone know? Not very many people. Instead, they try to do wideband speech coding. Right? We want to take, you know, operatic frequency ranges worth of speech and encode all of that and send it to give you very, very, very high quality audio. We're not trying to send very, very low bit rates. Because the effect of any errors is devastating at low bit rates. If they're interactive. Of course, if it's stored, it's not a problem. Right? There we can code it like MPEG, and we can code enormously. Because if we don't get the bits when we do the file transfer, we can request the bits to be retransmitted, and so we can use very high codings there. But for interactive speech, we don't want to use very high codings. For video, if you don't have the data, what do? You just show the same frame again. And what's interesting is you can actually drop every 100th frame, which statistically would be a bit error rate of 10 to the minus 2, and the user won't notice. Any of you watch television via the digital cable networks? No one? Because one of the things that happened is cable networks, like broadcast television, also switched to digital. And one of the interesting features is that you don't get random errors anymore. You get block errors. And suddenly you see this big portion of the screen that goes all from big color over a very big block because there was an error. Because errors are now correlated, because they affect these coefficients, not random little bits. Now again, if you don't have to play things out in real time, if you're allowed to do smarter things here, and since you have a computer at the end of it, you can do things like hiding the fact that you have errors. If you get a frame and you say it's an error, just throw it away. Don't even bother showing it to the user. Don't upset them. So what do they see? They see the football. And then the next thing they see is they've already kicked through the ball. The one that was in here, it was just dropped. And over long periods of time, you can lose whole frames. The user won't notice. So the key problem is it's about patterns of loss. So if it isn't adjacent packets that are lost, in general, forward error correction works fine. So Angela Safa was a visitor here a few years ago. She's one of this team that worked on something called the Robust Audio Tool, or RAT. And the basic goal here was loss concealment. Hide the fact that you had losses. So take advantage of the psychophysics of the user to hide the fact that, whoops, sorry, we didn't have any data to play out. So rather than play something that will annoy you, I will play out something that you may not notice. Why is that so useful? Because it's about user perception. So another speech that I heard yesterday was very interesting. A certain company in the Netherlands, a very large manufacturer of consumer electronics, beginning with P, found out that, interestingly enough, if you make a television set and there are certain problems, the user won't blame it on the television set. They'll blame it on the network. They'll blame it on the passing aircraft, the car driving by, or whatever. They won't blame it on the television set. But if you have other kinds of errors, they will blame it on the television set. And so this company, in an effort to improve the customer's perception, is purposely engineering their television sets not to have the kind of errors that people will blame on the television. If there are going to be any errors, they want the errors to be blamed on someone else. And they spent a lot of money, like 16 people working for 4 years, to try to understand how to re-engineer television sets so that the user perception is higher quality. And you may say, this sounds like fraud to me. But the same company noticed that if, for instance, you put little background lights on the side of the big display, that the user's perception is that this is a better display. It's a better TV. Okay? Now, why is all of this important? Because users pay based upon perception, not based upon the technical attributes. There are very few users who do, as I do, when they first get a product, the first thing to do is either find the screws to take it apart or get out the Dremel motor tool and cut the case apart so you can look at what's inside. Okay? Most customers take their device, plug it in, watch it, listen to it, whatever, and they say, hey, looks pretty good to me, or sounds really great to me. Okay? Now, does this matter? Well, yes, there are some people for whom that difference matters. And so when I was a student, because we had this group doing speech processing, we had an acoustically suspended room. So it was a room built inside another room, and it was arranged so that it was physically isolated vibrationally from the building. And you could go into this room, and there were these incredible speakers and amplifiers attached to a very large computer in the next room, and you could play digital audio. And as a student, we would have a contest. Name that tune. And we would start by playing the 16th bit alone out of the digital stream. So the bottom order bit out of 16-bit sampled audio. And the question is, listening only to the bottom bit, could you identify the song that was being played? And the surprising thing is, sometimes you can. Now, why is that so amazing? Well, any of you listen to CDs, the music on CDs? Yes? Is the 16th bit there in audio CDs? No. Only the 15 high-order bits are encoded for audio CDs. So it says there is information there that even though it's this digital media and it's wonderful and all of that, that in fact is being thrown away. So my wife and I have an acquaintance who's an extreme audiophile with sort of a place this big just filled with drawers filled with CDs. And these are the sorts of people who can tell you the difference between, does the amplifier have this model tube in it or this other model of tube in it because of the difference in the noise characteristics of the amplifier. Okay? So there are these people who have incredible perception. Don't have them as customers. Right? Because they're almost impossible to please. They'll have extreme demands. But for almost everyone else, the errors you can cover up by trying to hide them. These people will be able to tell you that at 15.47 minutes into the song, there was a loss of a sample. It's very hard to provide satisfactory service for them, but fortunately they're very few. So the result is, quality doesn't always have to be toll quality. It has to be good enough, or good enough for the current application. And we talked about this earlier, so I won't say much more about it. So again, how do we implement it? We use RTP. RTP packet has a version field in it, a padding indicator, an extension indicator, a contributing source field, a CC field, a marker field, a packet type field, a sequence number, a timestamp, and then a synchronization source identifier, and then a contributing source ID, and then the actual sample. So, what does all of this mean? Well, for packet types, we can say, I have GSM coded audio, it's 8,000 samples per second, single channel, or I have 16-bit linear audio at 44.1 kilohertz per second, stereo, or mono, I have video, etc. So when I receive one of these packets, I can simply go to this field, and from that I know which kind of codec to hand it to decode. This is really very neat, because it means, for instance, that if we set up a call, we could agree at the beginning of the call that you can decode both, or let's say all three, 16-bit linear audio, stereo, 16-bit audio mono, G711, which is one of these PCM-coded audio schemes here, and GSM-coded audio. And we simply agree upon that at the beginning. And let's say I'm in my office, and you're sitting at home, and you're attached to your broadband network, and I'm attached to the fixed broadband network. We can send 16-bit linear stereo sound over the session. Now what happens when I switch over to my wireless LAN equipped device and go walking out of the building? Well, at first the signal starts to degrade and the loss rate goes up. So what can I do? Well, I send you back an RTCP message saying, don't bother sending any more 16-bit stereo. Send mono. Now switch to G711. And now that I move out in the courtyard and I have much lower data rates and much higher errors, send me G711 with an extra bit of GSM-coded audio for redundancy. And we didn't have to set up a new session to do that. I just had to give you feedback saying it's time to change which codec you're using. And since in every packet I can know which codec you use, I know how to decode it. Now this is very neat. So a student a couple years ago did a very nice thesis showing that if you do this, if you get increasing amounts of impairment in the network due to congestion or user mobility or whatever, you can simply change which codec you're using to increase or decrease the rate. Right? So if things are bad, you decrease your rate. And if things are very good, you increase your rate. And he could do all this adaptively by just simply looking at the feedback messages he was getting from the RTCP. Very, very nice. And then lots more codec. An important point today is there's a whole range for dynamically assigned codecs, and RFC 3551 says no new static assignments will be made. So the idea is now you should dynamically negotiate which codec will use which payload type. And then you can read all about these different details of the audio encoding. So the timestamps, why your timestamps there was we said we need them to have a temporal sense of playouts and to deal with avoiding replays, and it was initially supposed to also increase security. We know it really doesn't do very well on this. Why not? It's only a 32-bit value, right? And so if I have access to the network, I can read which timestamps you're using. I can fake new packets that have the right timestamps. Right, so it really doesn't actually provide that much security if you can get to the network. And the granularity of the timestamps are in units based upon the sampling rate for whatever payload type you're using. Another neat thing is we can actually mix multiple streams together. So there are people today that, for instance, using linear 16-bit at 44.1 kilosamples per second audio have a virtual symphony orchestra. They have one person over here playing the bass violin, another violinist over here, a trumpet player there, a pianist there, and you simply bring all the traffic together. And by using the mixers and translators, we can now bring them all into one virtual audio stream and then send that audio stream to other people. Now, why is this such a boon? Okay, does anyone remember why Alexander Graham Bell initially envisioned the telephone? He didn't do it for people to speak to each other. He did it so you could hear remote concerts. It was only later that somebody said, hey, maybe this is actually good for people to speak in the other direction too. But it was really designed so you could remotely hear things. But if we can now remotely produce content, bring it together, match all the timing up, synchronize it and play it out, it doesn't matter where the musicians are. And so I had some classmates, not surprisingly, who went on and built careers doing the original digital recording. And there they could even go back and do things like correct the pitch of the violin by an eighth of a note because there was one place that was played just a little bit flat. Okay, so we go back and edit it. So there are amazing things that you can do when you have it in digital format and you have timestamps on everything. But an important thing is this synchronization source identifier and the contributing source identifiers, because you must never play back to someone their own content. Why must you never send somebody back their own content? So what did we say this morning about echoes? Right? We would just create an echo. If you took their own content and you sent it back to them, they would hear themselves, but with a delay. Right? And you don't want the echo. Why else don't you want to send someone's own data back to them? Okay, any of you ever see somebody with a microphone standing in front of the loudspeaker and they didn't know what they were doing, so they're talking into the microphone and they walk over and go, squeech! Right, why did that happen? Because the output of the microphone went through the amplifier, out the speaker, was amplified, came back into the microphone, it did that again and again, and what happened? Each time it got louder and louder until it would squeak. Right? That's all due to feedback. So we need to avoid that, and what we do is we simply put the source identifiers here, so that since we have a different identifier for each source, when we're going to send data back to somebody, they can look at it and say, nope, that's got my contributions in it. Don't listen to it. The real-time control protocol, RTCP, is pretty straightforward. It has a version number, a padding field, and now it has something called a record count. So you can put multiple records into the packet. It has a packet type, a length, and a data area. And the records can be sender reports, receiver reports, source descriptions, spies, applications, etc. So for instance here, for a sender report, the sender sends timing information about, for its synchronization source, how many octets have been sent. So now at a receiver, if I get a sender's report, I can say, since that timestamp, since that synchronization for that source, we have its synchronization idea, from that timestamp, how many packets have I received? Oh, the same number as it says it sent, there's no problem. But if the number of packets I've received is smaller than it sent, I know I lost some packets. So I send back a receiver report message saying, okay, here's how many packets I lost, here was the time jitter, etc. So now the sender knows how much that delay was to me, and it knows whether I'm able to receive the packet successfully or not. So if the sender sees, oh, I'm sending you, let's say, I've sent you 50 packets per second for the last 5 seconds, and you've only received 20 of them per second, obviously I'm sending them too fast. So what should I do? Well, I should slow down the rate at which I'm sending the packets. Right? Or if I see that, oh, you've received all the packets that I sent you, what can I do? Well, I can increase the rate that I'm sending them, perhaps turn on the video and send you video at the same time. But now if I say, whoops, you're not able to handle the video anymore because there might be other conflicting traffic, or you've switched over to another device, turn off the video. And I can do all that adaptively and automatically based upon these sender and receiver reports. I can send compound reports, and there are rules about sending these. And the first report inside the compound report has to always be either a receiver report or a sender report. And then I can follow it by other sorts of data. Now, I should point out one interesting thing here. RTP supports a by packet. So I can actually send by RTCP a by packet. And this turns out to be a security problem. Why? Well, if someone else can guess the right sequence number and the timestamp to put on it, they can simply send a by packet to my port number and guess what happens to my player. Yes, sys, by, shut down. And there's no protection whatsoever against that in the normal RTCP. And this is a security problem. We'll see later how that's solved. There are a bunch of proposed new RTCP reporting extensions. One of these is the RTCP control block extended report, and you can report an incredible amount of data. That's the whole list of things that you can report. So not only can you talk about the number or percentage of packets that are lost, you can say, were these bursts of loss? How were the gaps between those bursts of losses, etc.? And start to do some very sophisticated things. You can report various quality measurements, your jitter buffer size, the jitter buffer variance, etc. And, as we already mentioned, RTP translators and mixers. Our result is that one of the things we can send out is synchronization data, where we include an NTP timestamp along with our RTP timestamp. So that means we can now replace relative time with absolute time. And absolute time is incredibly useful because with NTP distributions of timing, we can have extremely precise playoffs, therefore synchronize things essentially exactly over large areas. RTP supports many-to-many transmissions. So we can actually use multicasting and send RTP over it and have thousands of people listening and participating in something. It's all packet-oriented. We have sessions are just simply a sequence of RTP packets from a single synchronization source. We can do session multiplexing and deplex multiplexing, and you can read lots more details about this. But an interesting thing to know is that it's recommended that 5% of the session bandwidth be used for RTCP. So that says, of the total amount of bandwidth I'm going to use for communication of media in the session, 5% of it's going to be used for control traffic. And of that, 1/4 of the bandwidth is dedicated to participants that are sending data, so they can send their sender reports, and one of what remains, 1.25% are active senders and 3.75% are inactive senders. So it means about 1%, so times 5%, right? So how much does that take? It's down to 1.25%. So 1% of our bandwidth will be data from the active senders. But we still reserve bandwidth for anyone else who's not an active sender to be able to say, hey, I'm here, so we know about them, if they're allowed to send. Otherwise, we'd never get a chance because these people who are actively sending would be the only ones sending. Our TFP, the real-time streaming protocol, basically looks like a remote VCR control. We can say, do we want to play or not to play? We can send it over UDP or TCP, and basically uses web security techniques to be able to control the security. And this is basically a session description. So we say what kind of codec we want to use, the pulse code modulated mu law coding at 8,000 samples per second, mono, there's the source, there's the DDI version for it at 16,000 samples per second in stereo, blah, blah, blah. Here's the video that goes with it, and that might let us see some particular multimedia source, i.e. view the video that's playing. And we can stop it, start it, rewind it, things like that. And there's more you can read about that. And where we'll start tomorrow is with SIP itself. So, any questions? Everyone's still in shock. Okay, have a good evening. See you tomorrow. Send me the audio. Send me the files. Because then I'll put it on the website.
To him.
Yeah. He wants to upload it on the site for other students.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Gracias. من اینترنت رو فعلا فکر کنم قرارداد الان به شما نمیدن. بس مشکلی نیست. من اینترنت رو الان مثلا فکر می‌کنم که بعد از مرخصی بگم خب بعد الان مثلا با شما میگفتم که بکنم ممکنه که نگم به خاطر اینکه های What about you?
Have a
call. Metallurgy? But it's not what you go in the class. Did you listen to the professor in the class?
Sure.
Really? Yeah. Thank you, that's all. I love the professor. I'm in awesome. I'm in awesome. Thank you. Can I have that for you? I'm going to have that for you. I'm going to
have that for you. I'm going to have
that for you. But you can see the professor. I'm going to have that for you.
من میخوام اونم تکنیک بزنم یه
چیزی که من گرفتم و آتنا نتونست
بگیره
چرا؟ اینکه بهت ندادم خاطر اینکه شما ها هوملس نمیتونم جواب بدم
خب بذار حالا این چیز نیستم مثلا اینکه دسته این کنم 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 کنم
من مرکومتی رفتم گرفتم بعد ماهی سر بسکت خورا میدم بعد یوستی میخوره
بسامون
چی به تو چی گرفت؟ خودش به تو چی شد؟ اونو علی قرار یه ساله به بندی خیلی خوبی
شده
که سیمه میخواد
اون
حضیبه؟ آره اونو که حضیبه نگه 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 آره
مثلا کجام تلتو
خیلی بقید شما خودتون یک
کنید؟ بله بگم فیلن خواهم مثل حمله اسم این چیز سرویسیت
بخواه بسید من بیارم اونو بسید نشونه
چرا
بگید چیه؟ چیزی بگم ببینید یه چیزیه
این موبایل بگم
خواهم چیزی بگم خواهم به شما ها ندارم خب به اون چیز که من گرفتم بگم حالا دادن ندارم به من اینو دادم با این چیزیه که شبیه یو اس بی ماننده خب بعد بسی که به کامپیوترتون خیلی سریع نیست یعنی سریع که حد نسبت به ایران ده برابر ایرانه از این ظرفیت مصاحبه فیلم داره یعنی شما نمیتونید هر چی دلتون میخواد دیگه فیلم ببینید کلا ما خب اصلا دیگه مثلا میشه دیدا ولی خب
دانلود
میگیره مسئولیت دانلود آره دیگه فیلم میام فقط زیاد کار روزمره بکنید که خیلی عالیه سریع همیشه دانلود میکنید فیلم نمیسازید ولی مثلا دیگه مثلا خیلی حال از اون ترتب بیتون ببینید خب راه نمیتونید ببینید همه ترتب ببینید کار رو کم کنید خب ولی مثلا اینکه با یو اس بی رفت میشه بعد میتونید همه بعد چیزه بعد قیمت ما سر 23 کرون بردیم یعنی میگن تو قراردادش مثلا 99 کرون بعد تک میخورد سر 23 کرون بعد مودمش هم میشه مثلا اگه بخواید بخرین نه حالا یه میلیون دو میلیون میشه اینقدر دیگه ولی اگه چیز بخری یعنی هم قرارداد 12 ماه ببندیم دیگه مجانی بهت میدن بعدش اینکه من حالا من خودم امروز از تماشاتون بذار خودتم اینم بهت بگم
نه میشه هیچ که بسات رفته بهش ندادم
دقیقا
نه مستقیم این چیزه آدرس ثابت است
آدرس داری؟ جاب نداری
آها جاب نداری
حالا چیزه من این مستقر هم بزنم با همه هم میرم پس دارم خواهی خونه من میرم به نزی هم
خواهی
من کار با هاست میکردم خب این با کاب قابل مقایسه نیست ولی خب کاب بسن اینکه برای بیشتر بدیم برای این عرضه که نفردون به دکیر تحیم تحیم با شما میتونید کاب رو بگیریم اول کاب هم یه طرف قرار داری فکر میکنم کابلیه
همین بچه ها متاسفانه کسی میشود نیست بگیم و بعد بخیر یک ذره نخود
نه
همین بعد
همه ترانسلیتور استفاده میکنه
اینا دید دارن همه میگن که نه یه ماهی دو ماهی میشونم برای باید من مطمئن این قابل دارم
برای از این برشین دوازه هم باید من الان که نمیخوام ترانسفر کنم این که خودم دارم الان خونم اینترنت داره دیگه از اول تا بسون بعد چیز بعد همه درجه همه ماها رو درجه بدم بهشون یه بود یه جا بعد پکن بدم من گفتم خدا یه قرار بدم خب هم نگه هم دارم و دو تا اینترنت دارم خوشم هستم
نه
آخه نتایج قرارداد که هست که ماه
اول
نشده آره اصلا یه قرارداد هست که ماه اول پول نمیدی دادم
خب اصلا من حواسش اصلا قرارداد
ولی همه دوازدم با هم
با این دوازدم اصلا ما دیگه میگم نه گفتی که اگه یه موقع میتونم خبر بدیم
والا ما تلفن گرفته بودیم بعد چیز بود تلفنمون چیز شد بس بریم بعد هم
بس این شما گرفتیم الان هم راضی هست
من هم میخوام بدم هیچی تو الان این سنت اونم دارم
چقدر وقت استفاده کردید؟
فکر کنم دفعه میتونم تمدید کنم
دوباره. نه، یه سال دفعه تمدید کردم.
ممنون از اینکه خوش آمدید.
آم شما سیگار ندارید این که پاش پیش من خودش یادم یادم افتاد که از نمیدید خدا
بچه یه ذره آروم پیش بریم کمان بیان خب؟
من میخوام بیان
خب آمان خواهی بیان
خب آمان خواهی بیان خب آمان خواهی بیان خب
بچه
دارو بسی بزن نمیم
بسی تو کارت دوباره بکنم من کارو بهش کردیم خب بسی شما میرین دوباره تکرار میتونم برسیم آخه نمیخوام بیدیم بچه خودت چیز میشی چیم شم؟ عزیزم میشم؟
نمیدونم
نه میدونم مخوام میخوام بدیم مخوام شیش ماه هم در بیشتر دو سال میخوام هم در خود کنم از پایان خب به چیز سلام میدونیم من الان اینا رو اینایی که تو بهش گفتی من میدونم میتونم در من خودم بهش بگم تو یه ذره برو چلو بعدا به جوک کنم
باید بگو
خب
اینا درسته هیچ سر دیگه بسیم بخونی دیگه اینا رو با هم میخونیم حالا آره اینا بعد بشین بخونیم
اینا
ولی اینا سادی
در
هفت یافت هم دیگه
نه هرده لکتر هم نه خب میرم از اون بالا میام
آره هم لکتر هم
نه آره تو لکتر هم نه فقط من سی نمیم خود چه دیگه کنم شد خب خب آره ولی اصلا دوزنه شدی پاور نیست اون دوزنه رو بزنه
این رفت چیه روشن شد دیگه خب خاموش که شده بود دیگه این که الان جدید اومد که خاموش نشده بود
نه چیز میشه
آه
میخوابه